Welcome to On Deadline, your radio news from Odyssey newsrooms across the country. I'm Christy Strausser, Odyssey's managing editor of news. Most of us know the lure of addiction to one guilty pleasure or another. But are TikTok and other social media platforms addictive? Here's more.
A jury could decide whether tech giants deliberately designed their social media platforms to get young users addicted. Nicole D'Antonio reports experts say the case could open the floodgates for similar lawsuits.
For the first time, TikTok, YouTube, and Meta, the owner of Facebook and Instagram, they'll face a jury over claims their platforms are addictive. A 19-year-old from California brought this lawsuit, claiming the companies hooked her beginning when she was just 10 years old with features like endless scrolling and frequent notifications. Now, she claims those features eventually caused a mental health crisis, leading to depression and suicidal thoughts.
Meanwhile, a social media ban for younger kids closer to becoming law in France.
France's National Assembly votes 130-21 to approve a bill banning social media for kids under 15 and banning the use of mobile phones in high schools. It'll go up for debate next in the French Senate. President Emmanuel Macron has asked for the legislation to be fast-tracked to get it into effect by the start of the next school year in September. There's already a ban in France on mobile phones in primary and middle schools. A social media ban for kids under 16 went into effect in Australia last month, and similar bills are under discussion in other countries. Chris Foster, Fox News.
Interesting. Australia, now France. Does your bank account show a deposit from Lopez Voice Assistant, or did you get a check with that name on it? It's not a scam. It's a settlement with Apple.
Apple customers have been reporting deposits of between $8 and $40 since Saturday, depending on how many Siri-enabled devices they included in filing a claim under a $95 million settlement. In 2021, a lawsuit was filed against Apple, alleging Siri listened in on private or confidential conversations that were then shared with third-party businesses, such as restaurants and clothing brands, that then targeted customers with ads in Apple Search and in its Safari web browser. Christopher Cruz, CBS News.
Let's get more on this TikTok situation now. We're joined live on the KCBS Ring Central Newsline by Professor Eric Goldman with the Santa Clara University School of Law. He is the co-director of the Data Center for High-Tech Law and co-supervisor of the Privacy Law Certificate. Professor, thank you very much for joining us today. What is your reaction to this? Do you see a censorship issue here?
I think that we need to be careful using the term censorship. I associate that term when the government restricts constituent speech. When a private service like TikTok decides what content is fit for its audience, I view that as really more its editorial discretion.
The president obviously kept a close eye on TikTok being acquired by majority American owners now. Do you have any fears that perhaps he's exerting some influence as far as these editorial decisions go?
I do have fears that President Trump might call in favors to try to jigger the algorithm or particular items of content. But I think the point of the Trump administration selecting the owners of TikTok was that he doesn't need to make that call. That bias is already baked into the owners, and I expect them to follow that charge faithfully.
You know, you make an interesting point that we have to be careful using words like censorship or bringing up things like free speech. I mean, you know, the First Amendment prohibits government suppression of free speech. And I guess it might be difficult to prove that there is some sort of government suppression here, right?
There's ongoing dialogues between the governments and social media services all the time. This has been extensively litigated over how the Biden administration and members of Congress were in dialogue with social media services over things like COVID. And so we still don't really know the line when the government starts to lean on social media services in an impermissible way. But we don't have evidence of that yet, and I don't think we're likely to get that anytime soon. I think the real point here is, what are the editorial objectives of the new TikTok owners, and are they compatible with what the users want?
Yeah, I wonder what other challenges might be created by the selling off of the U.S. operations. We're in kind of uncharted territory there, right?
We're in a really weird space with TikTok because we've never seen anything quite like it. We've seen the forced transition of TikTok on the basis that we were concerned the Chinese government was controlling TikTok's algorithm. And what Congress forced the TikTok to do is to end up in the hands of buyers selected by the U.S. government. So one way or another, TikTok is under some government's control. It just so happens that Congress favored U.S. government's control.
Now, TikTok U.S. is blaming a power outage at a U.S. data center for the posts in question apparently not showing up, and that's where the claims of censorship come. I suppose there's a chance that they're right. There's a power outage somewhere that's affecting all this, although a lot of people are raising eyebrows there.
Yeah, a lot of social media services have been charged with some form of political bias one way or another on all directions, whether it's pro-liberal, pro-conservative content, pro-vax, anti-vax, whatever it is. Those allegations of bias are as old as social media. I would want to see empirical data showing some kind of systematic bias, and we just don't have that yet. TikTok's ownership is new. So until we get that, we have to be very skeptical about anecdotes that someone can point to something and say, I feel like this was removed or downgraded because it was biased. That could be true, but it's not really a convincing data point.
All right, Professor, thank you. Great analysis. Professor Eric Goldman with the Santa Clara University School.
So, are we better off without TikTok and other social media? And if we are, what in the heck would we do with all the time we now spend scrolling? Here's Dave Glover musing on that.
TikTok.
Stop watching it. Delete it from your phone.
I'm clearly addicted, no doubt about it. But it's sort of like being addicted to a drug and you stop having fun with the drug. And then it's just about defeating the addiction.
Yeah.
Like when I'm watching TikTok, I'm almost nauseated. And maybe it's just my feed. Maybe I'm just a freak. But I get so much AI. And every time I get AI, I say, not interested. And I don't know if they think I'm kidding or what, but I just keep getting more and more and more, whether it's a made-up lady or a made-up story or, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's just like, yeah, I'm not interested in this product.
That really sucks.
The thing that you are giving me, you're doing bad, because the thing you're giving me, I'm giving you feedback and I'm telling you, no, not this, not this, not this. And you just don't seem to believe me. So I may try to go cold turkey
just
here for a while.
Just delete it off your... Just tell yourself the next 48 hours it's deleted from my phone and I will not be opening that app.
I'm going to give it a shot.
You could also start over.
Yeah.
Like create a new account and see if you can get a better... Because I think certainly when you tell it no more of this, that's one thing. But it also bases what it suggests for you on other things. And they'll say that this is related to this and there's a connection there somehow.
Yeah.
Because I don't get a lot of AI. I get some. I mean, you get a lot of like hoaxed, you know, alien things or whatever. But it's not that I don't get that many. And it's interesting that you get overwhelmed by it. And so I wonder if it's just there's a thing that there's some weird connection with what you do like. And maybe those creators or maybe the people, it's the same people that are like boosting them. You know, I don't know. It's because those algorithms are so complex, it's hard to know exactly how they weighed everything.
But the thing is at this point, if you're not even getting any enjoyment out of it,
right?
Yeah,
all you're
just
doing
a time waster.
Is, and what is like your time is the most precious thing you have. You know, like don't give it to the TikTok. Like no.
All right, so here's the
just
question.
Take a break.
This is the question because this will be what makes it work. What do you put in that time instead?
Yeah,
there you go.
Because if it's a nothing burger, you're going to want to go back to it. If you're just sitting there staring at the wall, you're going to be like, where's my phone?
Right. No, I think I'll try it. Like a crash diet. Like
sure.
I said, delete it off my phone. Just I can't pull it up.
So. Yeah. And again, if you want to go back, maybe just create a new account. Delete that one or don't. Just leave it and start a new one, you know, with a different email address or something along those lines and see if that changes what you're getting.
I keep seeing stories. I mean, I only have one Gen Z in my life, and that's Phoebe. And I just don't know how much she uses social media. She's almost 21 years old now. But I keep seeing stories that Gen Z is unplugging. So if they can do it, I can do it. I mean, they've had it their whole life.
Yeah, they just replace it, though, with like doing young people things like drinking, partying. Well, they don't drink, do they?
Not as much. That's what they say.
Yeah.
It's just like, think about before any of this existed. What were you doing?
Right.
Watching TV, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that would be what everybody was doing.
Probably.
Like when you thought about what do people do when they get home from work? They watch TV. You watch the news, and then you would watch the game shows, and then you would watch primetime TV.
Well, it's like we had that story last week that before electricity, we slept 11 hours a night. You're like, I'm tired of staring at you. Mm-hmm. Tired of reading this book by candlelight. Yeah.
Take up video games, Dave.
99 time.
Get yourself an Xbox.
I probably should have.
It's not too late.
It takes up that time, but it's a different version of it, though. I mean, it's like, it's not going to be, it's only going to be whatever you choose to play, but it certainly has that same addictive quality. And I like it.
I should just, this is going to sound so self-serving and so like St. Dave, but I should just do more volunteering. It makes me happy.
You could do that.
It gets me out of the house. It makes me happy. It makes me feel like I've done something.
Sure.
So, and we'll try that.
Whether or not social media is addictive, plenty of us spend hours every single day with it. And recent federal actions that went viral, like the ICE shooting in Minneapolis, beg the question, can you trust what you're looking at?
For more on this, we are joined live on the KCBS Ring Central Newsline by Brent Turvey, author and director of the Forensic Criminology Institute. Now, this is obviously a very fiery issue that we've had over the last 48 hours or so. Many of us have seen the disturbing videos on social media or on the news, but did we really see what happened on Saturday? Do the pictures tell the whole story?
Well, there's pictures and there's videos from multiple angles. And if you bother to watch before, during, and after the event, you get the whole picture. There's a lot of fake information that's out there about the shooting. There's a lot of bad information. And what's interesting is that the federal administration has grabbed onto that, those narratives, and is pushing those false narratives. And the state government is having to come out and correct them. Because to their kind of credit, the news media is sort of trying to lean into that truth and say, okay, it's very obvious that what we're seeing is not matching what the administration is saying. So people need to be very cautious about what they're viewing and make sure it's from legitimate sources, one, and two, that they're watching the entire video, not just narrative sound bites or things from popular YouTubers or, you know, social media influencers. That's we're at this place now where, you know, investigative journalism is nearly dead, and it's very difficult to trust what you're seeing, and people tend to latch on to narratives that fit their ideology rather than the truth. So we're in that very terrible place right now in the country.
Obviously, as I mentioned, this is a controversial, a fiery, and emotional occurrence. In this discussion, obviously, we are going to do our best to keep from drifting into a partisan political discussion, because I don't think anything is gained by that at this point. And I want to let our listeners know as well, we're already starting to get some questions in from our KCBS listeners. Brent, you are a forensic criminologist by trade. So as you watch the videos, as you mentioned, from various angles, what do you look for?
Well, this is not that complicated. And in reality, I'll be honest with you, it's really not that controversial. It's only controversial if you've taken a side and you've already decided what you want to see and you've already decided what outcome you want. And what we're witnessing is people have decided whether they want, you know, the Constitution to be recognized and enforced or whether or not they think it's okay to suspend the Constitution to hurt people. And that's the real problem. So what I look for in these cases, and I do human rights evaluations, I do civil rights evaluations, I do shooting incident reconstructions, and I do use of force, not only training, but evaluations in criminal cases. And so the first thing I'm looking for is, what was the lead-up? And the first thing is, you have somebody, the video very clearly shows somebody, a female being pepper sprayed by someone for just being there, and him hold the victim of the shooting actually holding a camera, which later was claimed by law enforcement to be a gun, that he had a gun out, he was brandishing. There are people out there saying he fired shots. None of that's true. So then they get him on the ground, they knock him on the ground because he's recording them. Somebody clears his weapon, and then they empty a couple of rounds into him, like between 8 and 10 rounds into the guy while he's on the ground. So when you're evaluating this kind of event, the first thing you're looking for are the people involved in the shooting, are they quality hires? Are they people who are educated and fit for duty, whether it's fitness or mental health, or that kind of screening people go through? Then you look at, are they trained to use the weapons that they're using? Do they know how to use them? Do they know the law? Do they know the rights that the Constitution provides them? And then finally, what's policy? What is policy? And the policy is very clear on this. use of deadly force is prohibited except for under very certain specific situations. The goal of anyone working for DOJ has to be that it's about de-escalation. The whole thing has to be about de-escalation. If you're not de-escalating, then you're in violation of policy. If you're trying to increase or ramp things up, it's bad. You also have a duty of care to render medical aid. And in both the shootings, we're seeing that, you know, medical aid was blocked while the person was needing medical aid while they were dying. And then finally, they have to have the right training and they have to apply the policies correctly. Like, you're not allowed to shoot into moving vehicles for very obvious reasons. You're not allowed to, you know, shoot people once you have them in custody while you're holding them down. That's obviously a violation of policy. So those are the rare objective things that we look at. And they're not at all controversial to professional trained law enforcement. And that's the other distinction we have to make. Are we talking to professional trained law enforcement who know what they're doing and have a respect for the Constitution and the rule of law? Or are you talking to something else? Is it some other, like you said, we don't want to politicize this. We just want it to be, what are the facts? What's the evidence? And then finally, who gets to do the investigation? And the reality is that law enforcement's not generally allowed to grade their own homework. They're usually required to bring in an objective outside agency or an outside group to come in and do the evaluation, so they're not grading their own homework. Does that make any sense, I hope?
It does. I mean, Alex Preti was licensed and permitted to carry a firearm, which he had on his person at the time. Mm. There are claims that he brandished it. If you looked up the definition of brandish, I'm not sure it quite qualifies. He also had, extra ammo. He had a couple of magazines of ammunition. And I've heard law enforcement people say, listen, it's okay if you're licensed to carry, but you don't walk in to a high-powered, emotional situation packing a gun with a couple of extra magazines, and therefore he was wrong. As a forensic criminologist, what would you say?
I would say that that sounds like a law enforcement officer who only likes the Second Amendment when it protects them. The reality is, you can't infer intent, and there was no brandishing. Brandishing requires that the gun be out and be in the person's hand. The gun was never out of the guy's hand. That's first thing. Second thing is, anybody who carries a firearm is perfectly entitled to carry an extra magazine. That's totally fine. That's the reason why, if you're doing it for self-defense reasons, it makes total sense you would carry an extra magazine. And remember, I'm from the great state of Alaska, where we got open carry people all the time walking around with guns. Rifles, assault rifles, hunting rifles, pistols, because that's just good bear aware sense. You know what I mean? We got a lot of bears on the island. It's very dangerous. So having handguns with extra magazines makes sense. What they're trying to suggest is to create a narrative that he was trying to incite something by bringing a gun. No, if you're making that argument, then that argument needs to be turned on ice. They're coming into a peaceful situation with a lot of people who are cosplaying and wearing a lot of heavy artillery in a context that doesn't require any of that. They're trying to, what we call, procure cause. They're trying to create a context where it's okay for them to open fire. And professional law enforcement is very aware of this. Professional law enforcement will tell you that they are there to protect the rights of citizens, to peaceably assemble. We have a guy in Sitka who's just a nut job, who's a crazy guy, and he likes to bring guns to every peaceful assembly that ever happens. And everybody gets very uncomfortable around this guy because he likes to make threats and run his mouth. But the problem is, he's protected by the Constitution, so everybody just kind of ignores him. You know what I mean? So this is not a situation where law enforcement gets to go back and say, oh, well, I didn't like it because he had his gun and it had extra magazine. No, nobody knew that at the time. And by the way, he was cleared. It doesn't matter what he had or when he had it. They cleared his weapon and they held him down and they fired into him.
Thank you for listening to On Deadline, your radio news from Odyssey. On Deadline is written and produced by me, Christy Strasser, and by Lauren Barry. Subscribe wherever you get podcasts.